Sample Test 3. Part A. Spot Dictation. Work relations with other people at the place of work include relationships with fellow employees, workers, or colleagues. A major part of work or job satisfaction comes from getting on with others at work. Work relations will also include those between the boss and yourself. Management-employee relations are not always straightforward, particularly as the management's assessment of your performance can be crucial to your future career. There will always be matters about which employees will want to talk to the management. In small businesses, the boss will probably work alongside his workers. Anything which needs to be sorted out will be done face to face as soon as a problem arises. There may be no formal meetings or procedures. The larger the business, the less direct contact there will be between employees and management. Special meetings have to be held and procedures set up to say when, where, how, and in what circumstances the employees can talk to the management. Some companies have specially organized consultative committees for this purpose. In many countries of the world today, particularly in large firms, employees join a trade union and ask the union to represent them to the management. Through the union, all categories of employees can pass on the complaints they have and try to get things changed. The process through which unions negotiate with management on behalf of their members is called collective bargaining. Instead of each employee trying to bargain alone with the company, the employees join together and collectively put forward their views. Occasionally, a firm will refuse to recognize the right of a union to negotiate for its members, and a dispute over union recognition will arise. Where there is a disagreement, bargaining or negotiating will take place. A compromise agreement may be reached. Where this is not possible, the sides can go to arbitration and bring in a third party from outside to say what they think should happen. Part B. Listening Comprehension. Passage 1.
Part B. Listening Comprehension. Passage 1.
We asked a number of people who work in offices to tell us what they thought about the introduction of new technology into office life, computer terminals, visual display units, and so on. First, Anita, a secretary.
You're being pushed into a different world, a keyboard world. It takes away the role of secretary. It makes your role very, very different. You find yourself thinking, what are these machines doing to me? At the end of the day, you feel, well, when you've switched off the machine, that you've unplugged yourself.
And now, Peter, an office administrator.
Well, all our bosses have terminals on their desks, but they don't use them. I'm not sure why. Perhaps it's just as well because the system's overloaded enough as it is. If too many try to use it, it just breaks down.
Next, we hear from Roberta, an office design consultant.
We interviewed more than 300 people from different organizations attempting to automate their offices. There were few, I mean, less than 5% success stories. Senior management tend to think that if they install a computer system in their offices and give the staff a couple of days training, amazing new levels of efficiency will be attained. Well, of course they're wrong. New technology means that jobs have to be rethought, redesigned, and unless they're redesigned properly, then things will get worse, not better.
On now to Andrew. He is a bank clerk.
My old job was ordering up bits of stationery, such as money bags, you know. I used to write the orders on special order forms by hand and specify the numbers of items required. But now I do this at the computer terminal. I have to keyboard in numbers for everything. Every individual item has a code and also a figure for the number of items I order. You can imagine the kinds of mistakes that you can make if you are on the terminal all day. You can order 4,000 packets of item 2 instead of 2 packets of item 4,000. And it's so boring, typing in numbers all day long.
Our next interviewee is Edward, who works as a personal assistant for a large international company.
Computerization is very much the unknown. We've got these computer experts and systems analysts who are setting up the computer and linking it to all our workstations. But, a lot of the work they do, nobody knows about. I've no idea what they are doing a lot of it for. I don't know where it's all leading to.
And now we hear from a typist. This is Monica.
As for word processing, well, all the adverts say how much easier it makes your life and everything. But it has made my life much more difficult. When they're dictating, they can say anything they didn't like. It doesn't matter if they don't like it, because they can just knock it out later. I'm the one who's left with twice as much work. If they've not something urgent they need doing, and you've been on the machine for 3 hours, they don't say, well, can you do it? Or, do you want a rest? They say, do it.
And finally, we hear from William, a clerk with a well-known London shipping company.
It's an awful thought, but if VDUs carry on growing as quickly as they are, then office life as I knew it when I left school won't exist. Everyone will be a VDU operator.
1. Which of the following has a definitely positive view of the introduction of computers into office life?
2. What does Peter seem to think?
3. Who is Edward?
4. Who thinks that computers do not help much without organizing office work differently?
5. How many people are being interviewed according to the talk?
Passage 2.
Paris. A French state prosecutor has opened a preliminary inquiry into whether Prime Minister Alain Juppé can be prosecuted for leasing a flat owned by the city of Paris when he was deputy mayor. Judicial sources said on Thursday the Paris Taxpayers Association asked the prosecutor to investigate the lease on the elegant low-rent flat. French law bars elected mayors and assistant mayors of towns with more than 3,500 residents from leasing their homes from the local authority. The offense carries a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison and a fine of 500,000 francs.
Moscow. General Romanov, commander of Russia's joint forces in the rebel region of Chechnya, was badly injured yesterday by a bomb that killed and wounded several other Russian soldiers, Russian news agency said. Nationalities Minister Mikhailov, who is Moscow's top peace negotiator in Chechnya, said Romanov suffered an open skull brain injury. He said doctors regarded Romanov's conditions as very serious.
Colombo, Sri Lanka's Tamil Tiger rebels killed 8 soldiers yesterday when they attacked a foot patrol in the eastern district, the military said. 4 soldiers were wounded in the clash at Palamima Dukanda, Defense Ministry Operational Headquarters said in a communique. Residents traveling from the northern rebel-held Jaffna Peninsula to the south yesterday said monsoon rains were making life difficult for families made homeless by the current armed forces offensive.
New York. An uncompromising Pope John Paul has plunged into a debate bitterly dividing Americans, calling legal abortion a moral blight on the country's tradition of tolerance and freedom. His comments at a rain-soaked outdoor mass attended by 83,000 people on Thursday continued a theme he has been hitting since arriving in the United States for a 5-day visit. He compared anti-abortion campaigns to past U.S. struggles against racial discrimination.
San Fernando, Philippines. The cost of damage caused by Tropical Storm Sibyl in the Philippines has surpassed 1 billion pesos and is still climbing, local officials said. Sibyl caused widespread havoc when it battered the Philippines over the weekend, killing more than 100 people. Hundreds of people are still being evacuated from San Fernando, a city of 300,000 people north of Manila, because of rising floodwaters in the area.
6. What would be the punishment if the Prime Minister was found guilty?
7. What is the second item of news about?
8. Which of the following statements is not true, according to the third item of news?
9. What has Pope John Paul criticized during his visit to the United States?
10. How many people were killed by the storm in the Philippines? Passage 3. Thanks, Lynn. Right. If you remember, last week we talked about using emulsion paint on walls and ceilings. Well, this week I'm going to tell you about how to use gloss paint on woodwork. That's doors, windows, skirting boards, cupboards, things like that. Now, remember what I told. What's the most important thing when painting?
Preparation, Cecil.
Right. The first thing you've got to do is to make sure that all the surface you're going to paint are clean. So use a cloth dipped in white spirit to remove any greasy finger marks. Then, wash the surface with a sponge and detergent and make sure to rinse it off with clean water and allow it to dry. The next thing is to repair any damaged parts. If the old paint is loose or flaking away, the new paint won't stick to it. So use a special scraping knife, that's the wider kind of knife you saw, to remove any loose bits of paint. After that, you'll have to rub over the surface with fine sandpaper to smooth it down. Make sure it's really smooth before you continue. If there are any cracks or holes, you'll need to fill them. Use some filler paste, like the sort Lynn showed you, and apply it with a filling knife. That's the narrow one you saw. Try to get the surface as flat as possible, and then leave it till it's completely dry and hard. It's best to leave it overnight, in fact, before you smooth it down. Now, the next stage. The most important thing now is to make sure you read the instructions on the paint tin. No, don't laugh. You'd be surprised how many people don't bother to read the manufacturer's instructions. You need to know what undercoat to use, if any, for example. After that, it's important with most paints to stir them thoroughly to make sure they're well mixed and smooth, and so the color is consistent. Otherwise, you can get patches which are darker or lighter. Not very desirable. When you're ready to start painting, tip some paint into the paint kettle, if you've got one, or the bowl or whatever. Like so. It's best not to work from the paint tin itself. For one reason, the paint in the tin could start to thicken up if the tin is left open. And also, if you get any dirt on your brush, it could spoil the whole tin. Choose a suitable brush. It should be clean, obviously, but you'll probably find that an old brush is generally better than a brand new one. And then start. Use nice, easy strokes, like this, and make sure you spread the paint evenly over the surface. Does anyone want to have a go?
Yes, I don't mind having a go.
One more thing. Clean the brushes as soon as you finish, or you'll have to buy new ones after every job. An expensive business. Use white spirit to be sure to get rid of every trace of paint.
11. What's the teacher talking about?
12. According to the teacher, which of the following is the most important thing when you're painting?
13. Which of the following statements is not true according to the teacher?
14. Which of the following should be used to remove loose pieces of paint?
15. Why does the teacher advise against working from the paint tin?
Passage 4.
I don't know if we'll be able to spare a whole day at the Ocean Park. We've only got 4 days in Hong Kong, remember?
Oh, right. Well, in that case, I'd advise you to get there early. It opens at 10 o'clock in the morning on weekdays. Look, I think I've got a plan of the place somewhere. Let me see. Yes, here we are. You can have this.
Thanks.
Okay, I'll show you. Let's start with the lower level. See? Here. You arrive by taxi or bus, or whatever here, on the right. Can you see? That's the bus terminal. And you go in through the main entrance. You could go to Waterworld first, but I think you'd better miss that out, as you're short of time, you said. You see the cable cars? Well, those long lines are the wires, and the little circles are the cars going up and down to the next level. Well, walk past the cable car terminal at the bottom of the plan and bear right past the waterfall gardens. Actually, have a look in. There are ducks and other birds in the pool there. It's very pretty. Then, you'll see some steps up on the left. Follow that path and you'll come to the Centenary Garden, which is a good place to stop and take pictures, if you've got your camera. Then, carry on until you're almost at the children's zoo. Right? I wouldn't bother to visit the zoo if I were you. It takes quite a long time to walk round. But I do recommend the touch and feed section opposite, as I said. It's great fun for small children.
Okay, so we'll pay a visit there, and then what?
You could come back a different way past the Chinese rock garden. Oh, that's lovely. Do wander around if there's time. Then, go down the steps to the otter pool. You can have a sit down there for a little while and watch the otters messing around in the water. Then, back to the cable car terminal where you can catch a car to the upper level. The journey takes about 10 minutes, I suppose. It's quite a long way. Now, if you look at the other plan, the one for the upper level, you'll see where you arrive.
Is this the terminal here in the bottom left-hand corner?
Yes, that's right. The fun fair is in the top left-hand corner. Can you see? With the dragon I was telling you about, and the octopus and the spider. Do you think you'll want to go to that?
Well, I think the children are a bit too young, really. But they might enjoy watching other people.
Okay. Well, if you're feeling quite hungry by the time you arrive, which you probably will be, why not have a snack in the Chinese restaurant next to the terminal? When you've finished lunch, I would go to the coral reef first. It's that little building on the left-hand side. That's where you can see fish and other underwater creatures in a kind of natural habitat.
Right, that sounds interesting.
It's lovely. After that, walk up to the dragon and watch people being really scared. Then, you could come down to the Ocean Theater, which is just to the left of the center of the plan, and see a performance of Dolphins, or maybe the Killer Whale. You'll have to check the times for that. There's one at 2 o'clock, I think. I'm not sure about the high diving, but you may be able to see that as well. If there's time, you could also carry on to the right and have a look at Wave Cove. And finally, if you're not too exhausted by then, you could return to the lower level by using the famous escalator. You'd be finished by 3:30 or 4 at the latest.
Right. Well, thanks for all your advice. We'll send you a postcard.
I'll look forward to it.
16. According to one speaker, what could we skip if we are short of time?
17. When does Ocean Park open on weekdays?
18. Where can we see ducks and other birds?
19. Which of the following does not seem quite suitable for very young children?
20. Near which of the following is the Chinese restaurant sited?
Part C. Note-taking and gap-filling.
Another reason for the worldwide use of the English language is its use throughout the Commonwealth, which includes a quarter of the world's people in one-sixth of the world's land area. All of its 49 member states have at some time been under British rule. In some of them, English is the first language. Others, with several different languages of their own, find English the most convenient means of communication, except for small-scale business. Today, the Commonwealth is a loose association of independent sovereign states, nearly all of them members of the United Nations, scattered among the continents and their adjacent lands. British rule still continues in a few groups of islands, all but one of them too small in population to be independent states, but preferring to continue the British connection rather than to attach themselves to any neighboring states. The only one with more than 30,000 people is Hong Kong, with nearly 6 million. It cannot become independent because its mainland section is part of China, but had been held by Britain on a 99-year lease, which expired in 1997. The transformation of the British Empire into a commonwealth of independent nations began, in part, in 1867 with the establishment of Canada as a fully self-governing country still associated with Britain. Australia and New Zealand followed. With all these, full power was transferred, with agreement on both sides, to the representative institutions of people mostly descended from immigrants from Britain, though part of Canada was French. The new Commonwealth began in 1947 when India and Pakistan became fully independent. India's membership of the Commonwealth was not affected by its decision 3 years later to become a republic. All the major colonial territories in Asia, Africa, and the Caribbean had become independent within 20 years. In every case, power was transferred, with the help and agreement of the British government, to ministries responsible to parliaments elected by universal suffrage, but with guarantees of protection for minorities such as small tribes. One country at first declared itself independent without British agreement. In 1965, Rhodesia had already enjoyed internal self-government for 40 years, but with a regime that, in effect, gave power to the white minority, who were mainly settlers of British origin. The arrangement was objectionable to other countries in the Commonwealth, and the British insisted that it must be changed. When the leaders of the white-dominated regime unilaterally declared their independence, the British government considered the regime to be illegitimate and joined the United Nations in imposing sanctions, while refusing to use military force. Eventually, the white leaders agreed to an amended system which would give power to a government elected by equal universal suffrage. An election on this basis gave power to black ministers, and the Republic of Zimbabwe was inaugurated in 1980. In many independent countries of the Commonwealth, the British cultural influence survives, and some of their educational systems still reflect this influence. So too with parliamentary and legal processes. Some send military officers to British colleges for training, but British governments of both parties have regularly avoided any interference with their relations with other states or with their internal politics, although in some cases the original institutions have been fundamentally altered, replaced by military rule or other forms of more or less arbitrary power. In the United Nations, members of the Commonwealth are quite often opposed to one another.
Part D. Listening and Translation. 1. Sentence Translation.
1. I'm phoning about our appointment on the 16th. I'm sorry, but I can't make it. I shall be tied up the whole day.
2. Sales went down by 6,000 units in November when the Christmas order stopped. They stayed at 7,000 until the end of the year.
3. I have a question about the prices you quoted me. Have you included value-added tax?
4. I spent 10 years of my life as a teacher, and it was during that time that I began to understand the importance of the environmental issues.
5. Suppose you were at a dinner party and people started smoking. Would you take a hard line on it?
2. Passage Translation.
1. Well, I think the good points about London is that London is still a very tolerant and very relaxed place, and most people, I find, are very friendly. It's still a very fluid society. If you go to America, you find a much more ghettoized society in terms of races, where you have middle-class black ghettos and middle-class white ghettos, whereas in this society, you don't have that rigid sort of ghettoized society, even in Brixton, which is supposed to be the black area in London. You find sort of middle-class white people and black people living side by side. It's still a much more mixed and heterogeneous society than America, and it is, in many ways, in London, an open and a tolerant society.
2. This morning, I'm going to talk briefly about consumer price changes in 5 major countries during the period 1997 to 1999. Let's look at the United States figures. As you can see, the annual change in consumer prices rose from around 4% in 1997 to just under 6% in 1998, before falling back to around 3% in 1999. Throughout this period, the United States had the highest rate of inflation of the 5 countries considered. Now, turning to France, we can see that consumer prices rose less quickly than those in Britain and the United States throughout this period. Inflation rose to over 3% in 1997 and 1998, before falling back to just over 2% in 1999. Indeed, by 1999, the inflation rate in France had fallen below that in Germany and was now equal to that in Japan.